Take a few moments for yourself to absorb the energies, to center yourself. Feel the stillness of the space and the stillness of yourself. As we arrived here, early morning, early before the sunrise, in a twilight between the moon and the sun that will rise soon, greeted by this magnificent temple dedicated to Horus, son of the goddess Isis, and husband to the goddess Hathor. One of the most beautiful and preserved temples in all of Egypt. Here you can truly let yourself feel the magnificence of the ancient times, the enormity of the columns, the hieroglyphs, the beauty that surrounds you, that reflects the beauty that's within you, the sacredness and the deep stillness of your soul. Breathe gently through your soul, through your heart, expanding more your light, your love, your beauty, your compassion, your I am, your I am, your I am. Breathe. Let the energies that are timeless here fill you with love, with compassion, with joy, with gratitude, with appreciation, with care, with serenity, with tranquility, with peacefulness, with the feeling of the eternal soul that you are, with the feeling of the endless ocean of love that you are. Expanding more your light, experiencing more of your multidimensionality, from your intuitive soul to your living heart, creating a two-way communication between your physicality to your soul, to where you sit right now and beyond. Breathe. Simply let yourself feel deeper, calmer. Your love for yourself increases more, your peacefulness. And your consciousness and your awareness increases. Just in front of you is the Holy of Holies of the temple, where the high priest or even the Pharaoh visited and communicated with the divine, with his own intuition, communicating, delivering the messages for his people. What is intuition for you? How strong is the intuition for you? As you conjure up all your intuitive power, allow for it. Feel it. It can take a moment, and it can be in an instant. Always with you. Elusive, but yet attainable in every moment. Listen to it through your heart. Breathe. And soon as the sunrise comes to greet us and our soul greets the sun, let us peacefully and intuitively join our energies together in oneness with the multitude of beings that are here, with the ancients that are here and supporting you, loving you, smiling at you for your journey, and with the entourage of Kryon and your own entourage from all your lifetimes until this moment and into the future. Anchor yourself here and make it a pivotal moment for yourself, where you can literally change anything you want. Give the intent for it and believe in it. And believe in it. And let us hear more from the loving, compassionate, and guidance from Kryon.
Greetings, dear ones. I'm Kryon of Magnetic Service. This is the 16th channel in the land of Egypt, part of a series. Well, you carry 100 attendees in the lower Nile this time, starting to visit some of the most magnificent structures that the Egyptians have created. If I had to title this channeling or this message, or even what you might call this quiet time, I would title it this: The Elegance of the Ancients. It's a common theme that you're going to be hearing from me and that you have heard. I want you to just take a moment and think about where you are in the temple of Edfu. You'll notice the temples are getting larger. And as they become larger, you get to see some of the elegance of the geometry. Have you started counting pillars yet? I invite you to do so because of what I speak of next. Early in the morning, before the sun has arisen, is where you sit, dear ones, today, amongst the pillars of this great structure. When we speak of the ancients of Egypt, we speak about the pure times. When we speak about the elegance of what they did or what they knew or what they believed, we speak of the pure times. And the definition of the pure times would not necessarily fall into the dynasty numbers, but it's the middle times, the times before any conqueror or foreigner could become a pharaoh or become other belief systems spread here. A pure time meant that the Egyptian gods were still gods of love before any others came and intertwined themselves through hundreds of years in belief, before any foreigner came and would be part of their management or politics or lineage. We speak of the pure times, pure Egyptian times, and what they wrote upon the walls for you to see about how they lived or what they believed. You sit in a place right now that wants to talk to you about some hidden things that you don't hear much about, but it's everywhere. Count the pillars. And you will find almost exclusively that the Egyptians were glued to base 12 mathematics. And we have said this before, and although it is not in Egyptology, I will say to you again, there'll come a day when the elegance of base 12 mathematics will surface, and it won't be called the new math. It's going to be called the ancient math. I'll say this again to any mathematician listening now. They will smile at this phrase: elegant math reveals itself. And what we mean by that is that the patterns and the sequences of good mathematics start talking to you, and a good mathematician will see them and will smile. There'll be an aha. This sequence leads to this sequence, and oh my, take a look at this. The fractals that you find from biology to geometry and space will all talk about the 12 sides, the sixes, the threes, the fours. Seldom do you find fives and tens. Seldom. For the universe is made up in sixes and threes and fours, 12s, 18s. Count the pillars. You think that that is an accident. Count the priests and that which they felt were the sacred numbers. You think that was an accident. and you're not going to find fives and tens. And I present this channeling in this way right now as a warm-up to the elegance of this society. Indeed, it was the beginning. Indeed, there was ancient things and duality and all the things that you have and multiples of this or that. But dear ones, if you take a look at the core of an Egypt that was able to sustain itself with a God of benevolence, that's so important. Did you notice that this temple, as huge as it might be, echoes even the smallest that you've seen? Even the smallest ones. And the first thing you see is the two pillars created then for a space for the sun to rise. Here is a philosophy for you, before I get to the main one. A philosophy that says that the sun rises every day just like you, and that it is a refreshing day. No matter what is going on in your life, the sun rises between the two pillars to say that God is smiling on you and things are fresh and they are new. And it's a benevolence. And it's symbology and it's metaphoric. It's not a worship of the sun. Dear ones, the Egypt of then gave you metaphor after metaphor. So much on the walls that you see here are stories of energy, not necessarily even physical. The story of life for the upper and the lower Nile, a story of love of country, of benevolence. You don't find that, dear ones, in other places, not like this. Let me tell you something beautiful. For 30 years, I have been channeling, and you can call this a belief system if you wish, but it's not a system. It's the basic truth of the love of God. It's of what you would call the magic that the multidimensional energy of compassion contains. Something that right now is starting to be studied on this planet called the field and coherence. Measurable compassion. And the Egyptians knew it. I told you in this teaching for 30 years of one specific thing that I wanted you to remember from the beginning, that you are dearly loved. Oh, but there's more. Here is what I've told you again and again. Listen to this. For what I have told you again and again is written on these walls. Listen to this. You may live your life and you may never look at God or Spirit or the Creator or whatever you wish to call that source that is the essence of love. You may never look at it. You may walk your life too busy. You may walk around and say, well, I don't believe in these esoteric things. You may even say, I don't want to have a part of the belief systems or go to the church or the synagogue. You say, I'm apart for all those things. I'm a modern human today. I've got modern things today. And at the end of your life, I have told you this, that all of the time that you have spent ignoring the Creator has been looking at you with a hand out that says, Take this anytime you want to, if you choose to. Free choice. In other words, you may not look at God, but God looks at you. And that every single human being is made in the image of love and walks this earth equal in that, with an equal chance to take the hand of the magic of love and find a better life. This has been the message of Kryon, 30 years. And then you come here and you realize that as they slowly unburied these structures from the sand, the pieces and the parts that you can read that were not obliterated by other belief systems tell you the same identical thing. The temples are all built in a protocol, dear ones, of large to small, of a straight line leading to the altar where only the Pharaoh goes, and perhaps a priest or two. A large place that would contain the commoners, but they could come in, not covered so that the sky would shine upon them. All of these things, metaphors to a God of light. The inner chambers became smaller and the priests more sacred, leading all the way to where only the Pharaoh could stand in a place and do something, which I'm going to talk about in a moment. And it just yells that there is a protocol, that the commoners cannot quite see inside because it's so sacred and God is great and God is light. But God can always look at them. This was the philosophy, that each of them also had a bubble, a higher self, and we've told you that before. I have called it a higher self. They call it something else, but it's written on the walls. There is a self that is apart from the physical of every single human, and that self is the vehicle which carries the light that a human has to the next life, beyond the veil, after death. The metaphysics that I have been giving you for 30 years is exactly that. Could it be that as ancient as these were, that right up to the Pharaoh himself or herself knew these truths, and as the best they could would give that to them and all that were around them, right down to the commoner, who would then be told by the priests what happened inside. So what do you think happened inside? We sit inside, not quite at the altar, not quite at the small room which is sacred that the Pharaoh entered. What did he do? There are so many who don't study any of these things and said, well, they went in there and they had sacrifice and all of the things that pagans would do. What if I told you that what he did, I'd like to invite you to do someday. The Pharaoh recognized the Lord of Light, the magic of love. Whatever name it had and whatever type of God it had, the essence, the magic, was Haika, was all through these gods. This was the magic. This was the lineage, even of the gods. It was love. It was healing. This was part of the scenario of the God of Light. And you can just see the Pharaoh and what he did. And I'm going to tell you something that is not necessarily taught to the extent it should be. Dear ones, this place was built for music. but not the music that you think. It was built for tones, certain sonorities that were sung that meant something, because they were all part of mathematics. If I told you that you started this particular tour in the Great Pyramid of Giza, and that inside the king's chamber, it was about tones and mathematics. The pharaoh sang. He sang. One of the things that people in the courtyard listened for is sometimes the pharaoh's strong voice could be heard, because he didn't mumble. He sang as loud as he could about the Lord of Light in this place, blessing the life of the land, upper and lower, continuing the fertility of light. And although there was indeed a hierarchy of royalty, the royalty shared it. And indeed, perhaps in this particular place, only one man or woman could go and do something and talk to God. It was shared. And immediately, the Pharaoh would share it with the priests, and the priests would share it with the other priests, and those in the common areas would hear, "The Lord of Light blesses you and Egypt and the land, and will keep it alive and safe and beautiful, and help you with guidance to the other side of the veil when death sometimes eventually will take you all." And I can just hear them saying, "Death has no sting. You're here for a little while, but the real truth is what happens beyond." And if you've heard that before, it's been from me, which tells about a beautiful creative source who knows your name and is light and who loves you dearly. Don't be surprised if an Egyptologist will read that on the walls, because the Egyptians, even the ancient ones, even with the protocols of the gods, they knew it. They knew it. Now, what is missing here? I will tell you that music, tones, tonalities, and the mathematics of the sounds meant something. And in an elegant society that used these things, there had to be musical notation. Not all of it was simply orally taught, because there had to be a protocol that was taught in the temples, musical notation, that is, a way to inscribe music in a way that generation from generation would know what the notes were and how they were combined. Every elegant society had musical notation. So I will say to the Egyptologist, "Have you found some things that you cannot interpret, or you're uncertain, or are they a little too mystical perhaps to interpret properly? They might just be musical notation." Every elegant society also had that which respected its own history and the history before it. There had to be museums here, dear ones. And whether they were in the temples where they would belong, or perhaps underground, they had their own museums. Sometimes archaeologists forget this, and they dig down and they find things and they say, "Well, this had to belong to a certain time or an era," not understanding they had just broken into an inner chamber of the museum of an ancient. It's here as well. This society was elegant, a society that had medicine, where they washed their hands so thoroughly, they showed it on the walls as an indication that they understood there had to be something that later became germs. This is the elegance that we speak of the ancients. Not just that they had a god of love, but they used it. Indeed, not everything lasted. Indeed, things changed. But I wish to honor the elegance of the writings on the walls, of those times which were pure, a time when they said there is a god of light and there's a magic of love and benevolence for all. Not judgment, not horror, but light. And that the temples were built so that you could look at them and realize that they worship the idea, the metaphysical idea that when the sun comes up every day, it's for you. And it represents a new life, a new beginning, a fresh start. It's early enough so that when you leave this place and get up, the sun will be coming up. And you will watch this. Part of the reason the time was shifted so that you were here so early, 3:30 in the morning, was so that you could stand in those early brisk hours and enjoy what the Egyptians talked about, and why this temple is built the way it is, a metaphor for new beginnings. Don't be fooled by the idea that old is something that didn't work. What if it was just the opposite? There's a lot here to learn. Take these things and use them and discern them for yourself. Do not be confused by the duality that you also see on the walls, for they were human beings, just like you. You would say you believe in a very loving God. Indeed, if they could look at your history, they might be confused as well. Look for the light here and celebrate what they had. Let the sun shine upon you this day in the very way that the architects of this temple intended it to, with the metaphor of good things and benevolence and hope and life for the land. And so it is.